KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. I hope you were like throwing your hands up or at least your head up going, yeah, it's Friday. You know, I always say that when you hear on the radio like Armstrong and Getty, they always use the same clothes and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, it gets tired so easy. But I never get tired of that song. It's Friday. I'm so happy. We've got so many things to do here in Northern Nevada. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for just joining me for a little bit for the Monica Jay Show here on KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. We are live and local FM Talk for all of Northern Nevada. So we're going to give you a couple of events that are going on this weekend and even drag California in here, too, because I love Truckee. 884-9910. If you'd like to talk about anything interesting or special today, please give me a call. I cannot believe that I missed Jim DeGraffenried's birthday yesterday. I kept meaning to mention it, and sorry about that, Jim. Happy belated birthday. I hope you had a fantastic one yesterday, and I hope you're taking it into the weekend. You can send me a quick email like Dave just did. Thank you, Dave, at Monica at 991fmtalk.com. Actually, I'm going to pick a couple of things out of there to mention because it kind of got my mind working this morning. I like to just kind of look at the world around me on the way to work, see what's going on, and listen to what pops into my head. And this has been popping into my head for a couple of days now, so I want to bring it up with the fact of how much I appreciate you. But Dave said this morning, let's see, one thing about a comment you made yesterday on your show regarding the car explosion and fires in Carson City, you commented that people should be watching out for one another and noticing things like strange people around vehicles, etc. Well, he definitely agrees with that. And I believe it even more. We do have to watch out for each other. You know, I had a gentleman that emailed me a picture about a man that was looked like he was either stabbed or something at an ATM. I hate to go from happy to something like this, but that's the thing, is you're not going to know everything that goes on in this town. This actually happened in Carson City. And before I said anything, you know, I said, well, he mentioned that he had a picture. And I said, well, send me the picture. I always want to verify these things. So if you have pictures of things, trust me, I live on Bones and The Walking Dead and anything like that. Nothing's going to gross me out, so go ahead and send me a picture. But he was commenting that he really didn't hear this on, you know, Reno's news or anyplace else. He saw a little blurb of it on Carson Now, but you have to find the news for yourself. It's not just going to be handed to you. That's why I say we have to watch out for one another. And what I was thinking as I was driving into work today was I have watched for the last, ever since day one that I started on March 3rd. You believe it? March 3rd. There was an empty lot across the street here from the radio station. And I knew something was being built there. I think it's called the Loft. It's a loft-style hotel system, which is perfect right across from the airport, so that's good. But watching my favorite builder, DeAndia, Norm and the empire that he's built and the crew, the people that he has surrounded himself with, I watch those people every single day taking this plot of land and the process of the pipes underneath and then the supportive structure. And now we're up to the, you know, it's almost, I believe it's completely framed. The infrastructure with the steel and watching these guys out there labor every day. And as I was sitting there at the light watching them, I looked over and I saw one of our casino bus drivers go by and then some truck drivers go by, and I started thinking to myself, why does everybody want to be a famous singer or an actor or an actress or a football star, baseball star, a celebrity. I love the people around me that are, that work hard every day in whatever they do and enjoy it. Why can't you work hard and drive a bus or a shuttle? You know how important shuttle bus drivers and taxi drivers, Uber, Lyft, how important those people are to this community? Especially if they're picking up at the airport. They and you, if you're listening, you are the first contact that visitors have to this area. How outstanding are you to smile at them and say, welcome, and isn't it a gorgeous day here? Let me get your bags for you. And make people feel important. Excuse me, I'm getting all choked up about this. Make people feel important. You know, there's no such thing as a menial job. Everybody is important with what they do. Secretaries and offices. When somebody walks into your office, that is your business staring them in the face. And that smile and that greeting, that means everything to them. I can't tell you how my day has gone at different times from different moods that I've been in to, you know, I'm smiling and whistle, and then one bad encounter with a checkout clerk or, you know, somebody, and then I'm just PO'd for the rest of the day. Your attitude in whatever you do has the ability to change the world around you. I only seem like I'm grumpy here on the air because I'm trying to wake people up to what's going on politically, motivationally around here. For the rest of the time, I'm pretty happy. I try to smile at everybody. Even just somebody walking out the door in front of me. Start smiling more, and you're going to feel it more. A lot of things to smile about this weekend. So just think about that. If you are in Carson City, just a few minutes drive from us, woohoo! Here in Reno, it's the Revival Car Show! 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. right there in the middle of downtown Carson. I love this because, you know, different from Hot August Nights, the Revival Car Show, you want to show off your car? Show off your car. You've got a 80s Bronco you've been working on, which I think are one of the coolest. I always call those the Beachmobiles. Take off the back top and blast the music. You got a 56 Bel Air. Take it down. Put them side by side. Line up all the different gears of Corvettes, Camaros, all the different styles of trucks from beginning to end, how we've changed with things. It's just $25 pre-registration. They'll take that today, but tomorrow, you could still go and register for the show tomorrow. $30. Why not go have an awesome time, show off your baby, show off your car, and the proceeds go to local charities and the Veterans Guest House, one of my absolute favorite organizations because, well, no government money. This is sponsored by the Esther chapter, number 3 of the Order of Eastern Star. Love Eastern Star, member of the Masonic family, the Masons, Rainbow Girls, Job's Daughters, Demolay. Got it all. Talk about instilling values. In Truckee, we got the Truckee Air Show. You keep hearing our very own flyer talking about it. Go up. Take the kids. That's the most important thing. Take the kids to the air show because it's really more of an aviation experience and education. Get kids involved. Show them, teach them how we can get off the ground. The pioneers that took us in that direction, not just the Wright brothers. Learn the history. They weren't the first ones off the ground. Learn the history. And just enjoy Truckee. Anything in Reno. I can't even list it all. So all I say is Art Town. Just go someplace, enjoy something for Art Town. The majority of events are free all through the month of July. Where do you get that? So many free, wonderful events here in Northern Nevada. If you stay home this weekend, if you pout in the house, there's nothing to do. If you hear the kids say, there's nothing to do, then, I mean, we're slapping you in the face with all the great activities we got going on this week. So if you don't get out and do something, that's your own fault. We got an awesome show planned today. I've got two very special guests coming in, Dr. Richard Simmons and Paul McFarlane. Might recognize those names from the Challenger Center, the Planetarium, if you're familiar with anything that goes on at those areas, the university. This is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. And we're going to be talking about how Northern Nevada was involved and has been involved with that great wide just universe of outer space. You think the desert is nothing out there. Try working in space. So we'll be back. Until then, I hope you stick around. Just breathe deep. And most importantly, smile. Work those facial muscles. It takes a lot of them, but just smile. KKFT, it's the Monica Jay Show, live and local FM talk at 884-9910. Monica at 991fmtalk.com. It's all here on 99.1 FM Talk. Thanks for being here. KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. Talk lines are open at 884-9910. Also, Monica at 991fmtalk.com. You can also stream the show live at 991fmtalk.com. We also have our podcasts up at that location because you definitely want to go back and get a load of this show after it airs to get all the information of what's going on. And I have a couple of very special guests with me today. And let me get their microphones up and going here. Do this just, you know, as we go along, I learn how to do this. But a very special anniversary. Whoever thought when Galileo was looking out at the stars that we would be out there with them someday. And we would accomplish in such a short period of time when you really look at it, from where we got off the ground with, I can't remember the
Wright brothers in 1903?
No, it was before the Wright brothers. Remember the gentleman that
Montgolfier brothers with the
hot air balloon.
The hot air balloon, but there was even another experience with air flight. When you go over to Europe, there's so much, you know, ahead of us. We always focus on the Wright brothers, but there were
glider experiments.
Yeah, there were the gliders and the Apollo 11 50th anniversary. So Paul McFarlane is here with me. And so, Paul, I want you to give your title of what you do.
Okay. Yeah, I get to work with projects at the Challenger Learning Center of Northern Nevada and the Nevada Space Center, but I'm also the director at the Flashman Planetarium and Science Center at the University of Nevada, Reno.
And if people haven't been to the Flashman Planetarium, that you really are, you know, you're not getting out and experiences the experiencing the gems that we have here. And this gentleman I get to introduce, this is Dr. Richard Simmons, and you were the former dean of the veterinary school at, no?
No.
No? Former? I thought you were the head of the veterinary school.
No, not at all. I was at my academic appointments in the Department of Physiology in the medical school.
Oh, in the medical school. Well, I think, you know.
But I was the institutional veterinarian for the whole Nevada system of higher education statewide.
There you go, statewide. That's even bigger than you. slap me. But are you surprised that people don't remember our history enough to know the part that Nevada played in the Apollo 11 in the space industry altogether?
Well, the fact is, remember now, when a lot of that was occurring, a lot of it was classified. Like, for example, all the rocket engine technology that actually occurred here in this area, in mm-hmm. northern Nevada, in Sparks area primarily, that was all classified back in the 1960s when this was going on.
Yeah, but it's not classified now, and people still don't know.
Well, but unfortunately, we've become very blasé about the space program.
Yeah. You think part of that is when NASA kind of shut down the shuttle program? And I don't know, it just seemed like NASA was almost going away because of all these private ventures out there.
Yeah, that there obviously is that aspect, but I think public is just, they think things become routine, so they sort of tune it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the Apollo 11 landed on the moon, it was the largest TV audience worldwide. They estimated 1 billion people were watching.
Wow.
And by Apollo 12, it almost didn't get reported on. And then with Apollo 13, mm-hmm. again, the public got very involved.
Research.
In getting the guys back.
Right.
But after that, it became routine. So everybody tuned it out.
I finally saw Hidden Figures just last week. And what a phenomenal movie.
Yes.
What an inside look. I mean, was it really like that?
Absolutely.
Ah.
Absolutely. And again, obviously, when they make a movie or a TV show, they're going to use, what's it called, artistic license.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The bottom line is, yes, that was very accurate from the basic premise of the presentation.
Wow. How things have changed.
Yeah.
We appreciate everybody. Now, Paul, I'm gonna dote on your father here for a moment because I love your dad.
He's a great guy.
He is a great guy, so remind everybody who you are the son of.
Well, yeah, he's the smart and exciting person of the family. So he was the dean of the medical school at UNR, and then he also an interim president up at UNR. He was a president or a professor up there for many, many years and wrote a leading textbook that's used around the world in voice and voice therapy. So, yeah, he was kind of my inspiration and would take me as a kid up to the university and I could hang out in classes and also get to visit observatories and the planetarium. And I think that's what put the space bug in me is just getting a chance to see that, up close and personal. So I've been excited about space and about education ever since. And I appreciate you mentioning the Hidden Figures because there really are so many different facets to that in so many different areas.
Yeah.
It's engineering, it's physics, it's all these different areas. And so we're excited to try to help develop the next generation of explorers in each of those areas and all the different
sciences. And here I am saying, who needs math? I hate math.
it's the language of space exploration. Yeah.
I know that. And it's like every time I watch, excuse my ignorance here, but every time I watch an episode of Ancient Aliens, and I, it's like, that's the math. Mathematics, that's what everybody, sure. Those ones and zeros, that's the code everybody knows. So we're gonna be back in just 1 second, and then we're going to pick up this conversation because we have Fox News at the top and bottom of every hour, and so happy to be a part of that, too. You got to watch that national news and also what's going on here at home so you can be better informed. Trust me, had people not known about newscasts and things that were going on back then, how would they know that we landed on the moon? Thank goodness for radio and television, right? All right, we'll be right back after this with the Apollo 11 50th anniversary celebration on KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. Is there any other local talk? Okay. KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. It is the Monica J Show. So that, with my title, gets me the opportunity to plan whatever shows I want and have whatever guests I want. 884-9910 if you'd like to call in. But my guests today are Paul McFarland, who is the director of the Planetarium, and Dr. Richard Simmons, who is just retired extraordinaire, and you still have your fingers in everything. Let's go back to the last conversation we were having, Paul, about your dad, Steve McFarland.
Sure.
Forgot to mention his name there. I get so excited when I'm talking to fascinating people like yourselves that I get kind of carried away. But I've known Dr. Simmons for a number of years, and he called me, gosh, what was it? Like 10 years ago or
at least it
was a while, and told me about this project that sounded so interesting about bringing a Challenger Learning Center here. Of course, most people remember the Challenger and the heartbreak that the entire world watched as it exploded. But just the thought of remembering those amazing astronauts and bringing more people in to that environment, for teaching girls not to be afraid of science, for teaching people that, you know what, you can be an astronaut, and it takes more than just military training. So Richard brought me in with the opportunity to meet you and your father and be involved at the beginning of this for a project that needs to be, in my opinion, every single, maybe county, you know, maybe city is too big, but everywhere out there in the world. I'm going to go back in history because I'm going to keep you guys here until 12 o'clock asking you questions because this area is so important. Dr. Simmons, Richard, I can't say Dr. Simmons. It's Richard.
Dick, actually. Richard Simmons has another connotation.
Yeah.
I don't exercise. So.
Yeah, well, and I don't like him. I like you. So, Dick, take us back to the beginning in your time here of how Nevada got involved in the space program.
Well, actually, if you look back to the original involvement, was mostly support from some of the field training for the astronauts, whether it was survival, desert survival, or whether it was how to do geology. A lot of that was done here in Nevada. But also, the engines that took us to the moon and back, most of that engine technology was developed by a company called Rocketdyne. And they had a 116,000-acre field laboratory here in northern Nevada. And it was what we now call basically Spanish Springs.
Oh.
It's all housing developments now.
Yeah.
But back in the 1960s, when they were doing this rocket engine technology, they weren't launching rockets. It was just the developing the actual engine technology. It was all classified. So people could hear noises behind the hills, but they couldn't ever know what was going on.
Right.
So if it hadn't been for that test, and in fact, the individual rockets that landed the guys on the moon and took them off from the moon were tested in Sparks before they were sent to the Cape to be integrated into the spacecraft.
Oh, wow.
So we've had a huge contribution to the space program that because it was all classified at the time, and we've become so jaded since, that most people in the area don't know about it at all.
Yeah. I like that name, Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know that guy that did, actually being out at STED and actually
to
learn the how to be out in this kind of desolate area.
Right.
You know, that is just fascinating. And here we are on the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11. Let's go back to the beginning of the Challenger Center. I know I want to talk mostly space, but
Right. What
a great idea bringing the Challenger Center that we now have here in Reno. And I'm hoping people don't forget that. How has it gone over these last years once we finally got it going?
Oh, I'll let you take that.
About a dozen years ago, we found out about a project where people, young people, adults, kids, grandparents could train like astronauts. And it was started by, as you pointed out, Monica, the Challenger families. The wife of the commander wanted to do something as a living legacy for that wonderful crew, including Krista McAuliffe, the teacher. And she had taught elementary school, middle school, high school, and college students. And she said, what if we worked with NASA to develop a place where you could train like the astronauts train by doing simulations? So she worked with NASA subject matter experts. They created the first one in Houston back in 1986, and it was a tremendous success. And then other states and other countries said, we'd love to have this program to stimulate science and technology education as well. That's the wave of the future. As Krista McAuliffe pointed out, space belongs to everyone. It's not just for the mathematicians and the scientists. It's a frontier for all of us. And so,
especially the dreamers down here.
That's right. That's right. So they created that center. Then it spread around the country, to around the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, South Korea.
But the closest one we had to us was Sacramento for the longest time.
That's right. There's one in Chabot, the Chabot Space and Science Center. They're in the Oakland, Berkeley area. But we didn't have one for our kids. And so we took field trips there. And our students, I took some of my high school students, they said, this is fantastic. And then they said, how come we don't have one in our state?
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, how come we don't? And then we found out, because this can, it could be a challenge.
Yeah.
But we have a wonderful team of people here. You pointed out I was privileged to get a chance to work with my dad, Dr. McFarland. He had been the interim president at the university, and he said, you know, we need to encourage more young people to pursue science and technology, engineering, math, medicine, all of these different related careers, because space travel involves all of them. From physical education to biological sciences to everything else, communication sciences. So we got to work with Dr. Simmons, who was chief veterinarian at NASA and was familiar with what was going on there. Dick Simmons, that's right. And Dick came on board enthusiastically. Dr. Jim Taranik, or James Taranik, who was the president of DRI. He had been the chief science officer at NASA. He'd flown the first science payload on the space shuttle, but he was based right here in Nevada, and he met with us to get this project started. It was really his vision to see this as a way to get students inspired and excited about all these different branches. Dr. Wendy Calvin, who lives right here in the area, she is on the Mars Exploration Rover science team, and she's now the chair of geological sciences and engineering at UNR. But she uses instruments at Mars on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter right now that's monitoring the surface of Mars. And she gets that information in a little office here in Reno, Nevada. But she works in two worlds, on Earth and on Mars. So she's involved. Dr. Melody Rodrigue, who's an astrophysicist who got to use the Hubble Space Telescope for her research. She's based here at UNR. She's our president now. And
that's one of my most treasured books, is pictures from the Hubble.
Yeah.
I just, this huge coffee
gorgeous,
book table. And
images.
It's just amazing to look. I even have a site on Pinterest that I go through. It's just called Sky. Yeah. And it's just all the different nebulas and how beautiful they
are.
It's
opened the universe to everyone.
It really has.
So these were the team of people here in Northern Nevada that said, we need to do something for our young people to stimulate that interest and that education, to be able to pursue higher education, college and career pathways. So they got together and formed a nonprofit group and worked to raise the funds from wonderful organizations here in town, like the Redfield Foundation and others, that stepped up to help create a place where you could reach for the stars and do it by hands-on activities. At the planetarium, we love that because you're introducing people to the universe. They're going to learn about that and see it and absorb that. And this kind of takes that next step, is from being a passenger or a participant, a passive observer, to an active participant. We allow students and adults and teams of people from businesses and other organizations to become the crews on simulated NASA-based missions to the Moon and Mars.
And that, like I said in an analogy when we were off the air, I don't like to watch baseball. I like to play baseball.
Right,
there's a
right.
big difference. Now, where is the Challenger Learning Center housed?
It's housed at the National Automobile Museum, and it's in Gallery 3 primarily, but we have an exhibit gallery as well. We got to work with a wonderful person, the director there, Jackie Frady, embraced this project as a way, again, to introduce people to STEM education. It's an extension in many ways of that desire of transportation. So using machines and motors to take us further, farther out into the universe. So humans have been doing that since the very beginning, from the wheel forward, I guess. So now we're using rockets. And We're looking at things like...
We just want to go fast.
Well, to go fast and go farther, I think. And,
yes.
And machines help us to do that. So that's it's been a fantastic venue. It's a gorgeous museum. And it's such a privilege to be able to have our mission control and our spacecraft modules there so that groups like yourself, like you say, you can't not just watching the game but playing in the game. You get to be the astronaut.
So is it part of the Washoe County School District at all? I mean, have they embraced it?
Lots of schools come and participate. Now, it actually has not officially reopened, but it's been relocated, and we've done our first a dozen test missions, Mars missions. So we'll be working with folks within the school district as we move forward to continue to integrate that. We would love to see certain grade levels groups be able to come, everybody in that grade level. And we've had schools from across Washoe County, across Nevada, and even further afield from areas in California who are coming to help do these test missions. So in the coming month and year, hopefully we'll get a chance to work even more closely with the science coordinator and other people as we determine how best to provide these opportunities.
Yeah, because like you said, it's not just math. I mean, look at the geology that we have here in Nevada our mines and people who live out in the rural areas. What do kids do? You know, when you're in those green, swampy areas, you go and you collect bugs. Kids out in the rurals here in Nevada, you go out and collect rocks.
Sure.
And you learn the different sediments.
Yeah.
But that's just, I was so proud to be, you know, whatever publicity I could give you on that. I think it's an amazing, amazing thing. So please let me know when it is back reopened so people can, you know, take a peek, look around when you're there visiting the National Automobile Museum.
Well, we hope to be able to offer a community mission soon where kids and their parents or their grandparents can sign up to do these projects together. And that's actually how we first did it. When we went, I got to go with my dad, Dr. McFarland, and my daughter to a Challenger Center in California, and all three generations were on a mission together, and we were all learning stuff, we were discovering stuff. My daughter, interestingly enough, was selected by the commander of that mission, Commander Gray. She selected Annie to be the communications officer.
Oh, very cool.
And Annie was actually very scared at first and kind of timid about that. She wasn't sure. She said, I don't think I can do it. I said, you'd be great. No, Dad, you do this. And so I said, okay. So I started off, and I was doing it at first. Then within a few minutes, she wanted to grab that microphone and said, I think I'm ready to come up. And I really credit that as being one of the things in her life as a little 10-year-old that brought her out of her shell and got her excited about science and learning and education. And it was hilarious to see her dad, who was the dean of the medical school, he was on the robotics team, and he had to write these little notes and deliver them to his granddaughter. And she would look at him and she'd say, oh, I'm sorry, Boompa, that's not correct. You need to revise that.
Ah!
And he looked at it and said, she's right. So he went back, and then she said, okay, now it fits the protocol and the format. And it was just a great experience for, like I said, here is a high school teacher, a university person, and a young student working together, experiencing the joy of exploration and discovery. And that's really what it's about, is about fostering that joy and setting kids and adults up for success in a team environment.
So. I mean, Dick, you have to be proud to see your work go into this and what's happened.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, as Paul was saying, I remember the first meeting we had, which was at a certain restaurant in town. I won't give publicity, but anyhow, that's when they got me involved. And I said, absolutely, because of my past history with NASA. But let me build a little bit on what Paul was talking about, the Challenger Learning Center. Even though we're not a quote-unquote officially open as a center, we do have interactive programs.
That's right.
That people that go to the auto museum can, kids and parents can still fly simulated missions on different kind of a simulator. Mm-hmm. It's not interactive in the sense that you're not having one group communicating with another group, but you have stations where you can have two people sitting there and run that program at that station. So we've still got programs going. We're still doing school programs. We've got our inflatable
planetarium
that we still do planetary shows at the museum.
Well, and we're going to talk about a big show that I've already got my tickets to, so you'll have to get yours as well. But we'll be right back with Paul McFarland and Dick Simmons right after this on KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. If you'd like to ask a question about the Challenger Center or that big wide world out there that we call space, 884-9910 and some very special programs we've got coming up. You can also email me at monica@991fmtalk.com. It's all about you. 991 99.1 FM Talk. KKFT 99.1 FM Talk. So glad you're with me today. Talk lines are open at 884-9910. My producer will have to tell me if anybody calls because I'm not looking at the monitors. I'm so enthralled with my guests right now. Paul McFarlane with the Planetarium and Dr. Dick Simmons, who is just a master of everything. And I said, NASA veterinarian, is that? We were just talking about a story off air, but you had a big part in the sending the monkeys to space because
I had
to get down there.
Well, I had a minor part sending the monkeys up, but the program that I did manage, we sent five mice to the moon and back on Apollo 17. And I was in charge of that whole program.
I mean, look at the experiments that you guys were pioneers. I mean, what was the decision to actually send the monkeys up first?
Well, they originally, if you go back to the beginning of the space race, the Russians decided to use dogs, and the Americans decided to use primates. And the reason the Russians decided to use dogs, quite frankly, was because of Pavlov. Pavlov was one of the most respected Russian scientists.
Oh, okay.
And he did his studies with dogs, so the Russians decided dogs were the animals he should use. And, of course, Laika was the first animal in space.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Americans decided they wanted to use primates because they were more analogous to people. So we started out with monkeys, and then we went to chimpanzees. You might remember Ham.
Yes.
And Enos was the other one. Ham preceded Alan Shepard in flight, and Enos preceded Glenn in flight. One did the ballistic flight with Ham, and Enos did the orbital flight.
The most treasured primates on the planet.
And the deal was that we proved that people or animals could live in space.
Mm-hmm.
Back when we were first talking about sending people to space, there were eminent people who said, we can't survive in space. We can't survive in weightlessness. One physiologist even published a paper, you won't be able to swallow in weightlessness.
Wow.
Because nobody knew.
Yeah.
And so particularly the primates, because the chimps could manipulate things to show that mentally they were okay, physiologically they were okay, and they had essentially computer games they would play with levers and things. And so that proved the fact that it was survivable. And in fact, if you really wanted to irritate Al Shepard, you reminded him a chimp did it first. But you couldn't be anywhere within arm's reach. but that did set the foundation for the fact that we could safely go to space.
Yeah.
And it actually started, quite frankly, with the Montgolfier brothers in 1786, when they were going to fly a hot air balloon demonstration for King Louis at Versailles. And he wouldn't let them do it until they could prove it was safe. And so they flew a balloon with a rooster, a duck, and a sheep. And the animals came back alive, so King Louis said, okay, you can fly the people.
This is how it all started and where we are today. I mean, this is just so amazing. All right, well, stick around because we're going to have to get into Fox Business News here in a minute. But that has to be just some of the most fascinating work that has come about to get us into space. And I think that that's one of the ways that we're going to have to get kids even more involved is just tell them that it's a big video game. You know, you've got levers and controllers, and I'm serious.
Yeah.
I hate to see these kids sitting behind these video games and stuff when they could be learning about real things that they could be doing that are even more exciting.
Yeah.
You know, actually, it's interesting you mention that because I don't know if we could talk about this later, but the Be the Astronaut exhibit is a new type of exhibit where this company, Eureka Exhibits, stepped in and said, how can we leverage video games and give kids what they call agency, the ability to make decisions, make choices, think through things. So instead of just learning about astronauts, you get to become the astronaut. And it was a brand new type of exhibit pioneered at Space Center Houston. And we have those same modules here in Reno now.
But see, that's where you have to think outside of the box for today's generation, because with some of the video games that they have out there, look at how fast these kids have to think.
Yeah.
And the controls and the decisions that they have to make. And it's pretty impressive.
Well, again, it's how we trained the astronauts. Neil Armstrong was in charge of some of the simulations that they were using to train themselves how to do the mission. And this uses that same approach. It allows you to leverage that technology and simulate. If you can't launch somebody in a billion-dollar mission, then you can simulate that activity and train them to do that. And it's a fantastic learning method.
And it's a great way to save some money, too. I hear it costs a bit to send those rockets up.